Mr. Riley, good morning to you. And Ms. Faust, good morning to you. Do either council have any questions before we begin? And Mr. Riley, you may approach and you may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, may it please the court, my name is Thomas Riley, Douglas County Public Defender's Office. I'm here representing Mabior, who is convicted of double homicide and related firearm charges and doing life plus. We were not trial counsel. He had privately retained counsel, and frankly, the issues on appeal are such that due to pretty much the inaction of trial counsel, the issues are basically going to be limited to several allegations of clear error or plain error and a number of allegations of ineffective assistance of counsel. There's nothing that we're going to be saying the trial court did that was erroneous, because there was nothing basically done by counsel, and I take no pleasure in this. But counsel pretty much sat on their hands throughout the trial and the pretrial. There are a plethora of issues, and I think many of them, I think all of them have merit. Some are stronger than others, and I will try to address them in the manner in which I think is important. But first, the facts of the case are simply that there was a after hours, for lack of a better term, house party with a number of acquaintances late at night, and as a result, there were a number of people from the party went outside, and two individuals were shot and killed that were in the party. The evidence in the case is all circumstantial. There's no eyewitnesses to the event. There is a video, a surveillance video from either a school or a business that was across the street from where the event occurred. It was like on the corner of 24th and I want to say Evans in Omaha. And the video is not of great quality. It's, first of all, it's motion activated, so you will see periods of time where it ends and then all of a sudden it just jumps out at you. And by the admission of everyone, there is no possibility of making any identification of any of the individuals. They were in color, and there's some indication in viewing the video that there's colors of clothing that could be demonstrated. But I think it's extremely important for all involved to recognize the importance in this trial of that that video, and how I think some of the evidence was was abused in an improper manner. One of the issues that we raised is prosecutorial misconduct in final argument, and basically this arises from a situation where apparently pretrial, the defense counsel was provided with some information that one of the decedents had been shot 2 years prior to the homicide in Dallas, Texas, and that maybe or somehow was present or involved. So trial counsel filed a motion in limine to exclude it, basically arguing that it was irrelevant, and I believe argued 403, but presented no evidence at the motion to eliminate. What's really important, however, is that during the period of this motion, the prosecutors said, we don't allege that Mabior did this shooting. He was just there. And then they said, we're not offering it for the truth of the matter, And then they argued that it was inextricably intertwined. So I don't know where we're at. And basically, the judge says, are you saying that maybe you did the shooting? They said, well, no, we're not saying he did the shooting. He said, well, then I don't think we need a 404 hearing. And that was the end of it. When it got to trial, they kind of snuck it in through some hearsay. I'll get to that in a moment. But what I'm talking about as far as prosecutor Corrigan's conduct in the final argument was that in spite of the fact that during the pretrial hearing, they told the judge and opposing counsel, we're not alleging he did this, and there's no evidence to support that he did. During the final argument, the prosecutor basically says the motive for this shooting is that Mabior gets into it with one of the decedents down in Dallas, and 15 minutes later he's shot. The clear implication is, and then they say that they explicitly say in the final argument, this is the motive. Otherwise, we're going to say this is just over a cell phone.
Is this one of the instances where you're relying on plain error?
Yes. Yes. I think the record is clear. I know that's difficult. Plain error is a difficult hill for us to climb. I understand that. But in this case, the prosecutors, on the record, stated what their purpose was, or multiple purposes, I guess, but clearly said, hey, we're not saying that Mabior did this. And then they get in the final argument and they tell the jury, here's the motive for this killing.
Well, is that the same thing as that Mabior shot?
I think the clear implication, Your Honor, is that that is exactly what the prosecutor was implying, that he shot.
Or that he was there involved in the altercation, at least. Is that?
And that's not necessarily true either. You know, the basically, they after the motion limine, the prosecutor said, we think Mabior's cousin did the shooting.
Did the shooting, but Mabior, they indicated Mabior was present in Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, but so how did that translate into a motive? I'm present, and 15 minutes later, guy gets shot in the rear end. And
what is the evidence in the record about what happened 3 years before?
The only evidence in the record is from the motion limine, which is pretty sparse, and it's mostly statements by counsel, because as I said...
Well, was there evidence adduced at trial that the jury heard about what happened in Dallas?
Yes.
What's the
nature of
that?
It was all hearsay, and part of my other allegations of ineffective assistance. Basically, there was one witness who testified, there was a neighbor who testified that when the cops went and talked to him, that the shooting was about a retaliation from something that happened in Texas or something to that
so
effect.
There is some testimony in the record that the jury heard regarding the Dallas episode.
Absolutely. There is evidence in the record, but it's all hearsay. There's no one from Dallas came up and said, here's what happened. There is allegation, I mean, there is allusions to this during the statement that Mabior gave, and I'll get to that. But clearly, as I understand the rules, this court has said on numerous occasions that the ABA criminal justice standards for prosecution function regarding closing arguments to the trier of fact, quote, the prosecutor may argue all reasonable inferences from the evidence in the record unless the prosecutor knows the inference to be false. The prosecutor, in this case, knew that the inference that they were providing to the jury was false. That's clear on the record, and I think it's plain error. Second issue I'd like to address is this first statement that was obtained from Mabior. We're alleging that it's the result of an unlawful arrest. You'll recall from the record that...
And again, no motion to suppress.
No motion to suppress.
Let's start
with that. There's no motion, period, except for that motion limiting. The defendant is a passenger in a vehicle driven by his friend who was the guy that hosted the party. The car is owned by a third person. The police stop the vehicle for a traffic violation, a failure to turn your blinker for a lane change or something to that effect. They take both of them out of the car. The defendant, maybe, or is the passenger. The police say they notice an odor of alcohol on the driver. They ask the driver for consent to search the vehicle. He refuses. They then take both Mavior and the driver to the cruiser car, place them there, and say, if you don't give us consent, we're going to get the drug dog to come out. Now, why they think the drug dog was there, because the only thing they did was smell alcohol on the driver. And they bring out the drug dog. They find less than an ounce of marijuana in the car, which, as you know, is an infraction, and it's not an arrestable offense.
Do we know from this record how long detention occurred before the drug dog, the canine unit, comes and does this?
We do not know the duration. There wasn't a motion to suppress. But that said,
so can we reach that issue here?
Yes, I think you can, because of what happens afterwards. Even if you want to say that the drug dog bringing there was a tier 2, it turns into a tier 3, because in spite of the fact that all they find in the car is a
magazine.
Extended magazine and less than enough marijuana, neither of which is a criminal offense. They handcuff Mavior, take him down to the police station. They sit him in an interrogation room from 5:30 in the afternoon, 5:40, and let him go sometime around 3 the following morning. He is certainly not free to leave. No reasonable person could possibly think that when the cops have them on the street, handcuff them, take them down to the police station, leave them in a room, say, you stay here, we're gonna have to talk to you, that they think they're free to leave. There is absolutely no probable cause at that point, and it's proven by the fact that after 3:30, when they finish talking to him for hours, they release him. The fact that he's released is a factor always, I know, is whether or not someone was under arrest. But I think that the bigger factors here are clearly being handcuffed, being in the police station, in a room, not free to leave. There's no probable cause at all. And I don't believe that the statement should have been admitted.
What was the statement?
It's basically what happens is the statement, it's kind of he never inculpates himself. However, the state loved it because first he says he left before the shooting. Then he says, okay, I was there when the shooting happened, but I was in the house and I didn't see it. Then he says, okay, I saw the shooting, and names the shooter as a third person. And at some point acknowledges going over to the deceased bodies to look for a cell phone that he thought either he had left in the house or they had taken. So I believe that that statement should have been suppressed. And it's important because although he does not make an admission, it was an integral part of the state's case. And once again, reminding you that there's no gun found, no clothing that matches the description found. They focused in on Mavior, and they decided that this is the guy who did it, as is indicated by some of the ROCA statements that we cited.
The video shows someone going through the pockets.
It shows someone bending down and
around the body.
You can certainly extrapolate from that he's doing something. Matter of fact, the cop said, what I think you did, I think you went through your pockets and robbed them and you executed these guys. That's what
they were saying. But the photos show cell phones laying on the ground, wallet.
Once the police get there,
doesn't appear to be a robbery at that point.
No, it's not. Another interesting piece of this is the argument we're making on best evidence, where the defense counsel allowed the police witness to narrate what was going on during the video.
So the best evidence is the video?
Yes.
And it did come in?
The evidence did come in. What shouldn't have, and
so is this really best evidence, or are you suggesting improper narration? What's the...
It's both. It's both. I mean, we in our brief, we cited Professor Mangrum's iteration on the Martin case that was, it's about 50 years old, and he criticizes it because he's saying that the information, the narrative that was used in that case was not from the person who actually saw what happened. Cop didn't see what happened. He's making his determinations on who's who. In the narration, he's saying, here's Mabior doing this, here's the other guy doing that. He's naming Mabior the guy that's doing the shooting, and he's naming Mabior the guy that is going through the pockets, whatever. And he is not a first-hand knowledge person. He's doing it based on the video. And what Mangrum says is the video gets in, but the narration doesn't, because he is not the person who saw it. The jury can make their own conclusions on whether or not this is Mabior or someone else. So I think that's why I'm so focused in part on...
Would that be subject to a harmless error analysis?
Well, everything's always certainly subject to harmless error, but I think in this case, since it's all circumstantial, and this court, when talking about harmless error, it kind of is a totality of the circumstances. How important is this evidence in the scheme of things? And this video is very, very important.
But the video, you can see the video comes in.
I can see the video comes in, absolutely, without narrative, other than to say, we got this from the school of business across, and here I'm going to push the button, and you can see it goes from, 11:30 to 12:15 or whatever the time is, and we verified it. That's where, as far as it should go. It should not be a situation where you also said, well...
Was the narrative redundant of the video?
I'm sorry, no, because the video doesn't say this is Mabior. The video shows people that everyone admits and acknowledges are indiscernible. You can't tell who's who. There's a case that we saw from the Court of Appeals. I think it's Hickey. Basically, it's a video, and the officer was allowed, I think it was a shooting, and the officer was allowed to testify that this is so-and-so. But they laid a ton of foundation. I've known this guy for 3 years. Here's the tattoo that I recognize. All of that kind of stuff. There's none of that here. So I think that this is definitely distinguishable and important.
So part of why Mabior's statement is an issue is because he admits to patting down the bodies to find his cell phone.
Yeah, that's why,
And then the officer says, you can see somebody patting down the bodies, therefore it's Mabior.
Yeah, but that...
So if one goes out, they both go out.
That's right. That's correct. Another thing I wanted to touch on is there's two I'd like to squeeze in if I can. One is the vouching for... the prosecutor vouching for the credibility of the police officer. We cited over 24 times when the prosecutor, during questioning or in final argument, was saying, we did this, we did that, we executed the search warrant, my detectives, this is totally improper. This is totally improper. And courts have said, if it happens once or twice, no big deal. Or if during final argument, the prosecutor makes clear, hey, we don't represent the police. These are lay jurors, and the cases are pretty clear when they say that it's really improper to allow the prosecutors to align themselves with the police, because jurors have a tendency to want to believe prosecutors and want to believe the cops. And if they think they're all on the same team, which we kind of know they are, but regardless, that's not how it works in courtrooms. And I think that
So do you have that before us as ineffective assistance of counsel or plain error?
On the vouching, we rated on both as plain error and separately as ineffective assistance. I think that it's right in front of you in the argument and in the questioning, and you can determine whether or not that it was error for the defense lawyer at some point in time to say enough is enough.
That's really more of a ineffective assistance argument.
Yeah, it is, except we all know that you can't vouch. I mean, that's a given. We all know what the law is. And if a person doesn't object to something that we know is improper, that right there in front of you, that can't be a strategy. And the only other thing I wanted to mention briefly is the failure to raise the confrontation clause and hearsay on statements made about one witness who testified, and then was never asked about clothing, and then when a cop comes and testifies, he says, she told us that he had a red hoodie on. No objection, no confrontation argument. I know the state said, well, it's effect on the hearer. No, it's not effect. That would be, okay, officer, I saw Tom Riley shoot victim, and that's not hearsay, because that's why I went and arrested Tom Riley. Come on, that's a bogus argument. I mean, I don't have enough time to deal with all the rest of the allegations or arguments, but I do not want to, I still want to preserve them based on the brief, with the court's permission. So any other questions, I'd be more than happy to try to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Faust, good morning to you.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Stacey Faust. I'm Assistant Attorney General representing the appellee of the state of Nebraska. The primary evidence against Maybeer in this case was the video surveillance from the school that showed that a person wearing bright red or orange stood over Dang's body, shot twice, bent over Dang's body, and then Thok's body as if looking for something on both, and then ran to get into a black vehicle, already fleeing the scene so that the vehicle had to stop and let that person in. Both's testimony that she was driving the fleeing vehicle at the scene and that she had to stop the car to let Maybeer in. Maybeer's ever-changing version of events to Detective Young and his admission that he was the one who patted down the victim's body looking for his cell phone. The evidence that Maybeer was involved in a prior shooting of Thok in Dallas, Texas, and the evidence was not all hearsay. It was the families of the victims talking to the detectives, referencing Maybeer involved in that shooting, but it was also Maybeer's own statements that he was there and that Thok tried to fight him, and then Maybeer's cousin ended up in the altercation with Thok, and then 15 minutes later, Thok was shot by a different group. And then finally, the 9mm handgun magazine located on the passenger floorboard by Maybeer during the traffic stop. That magazine contained the same brand and caliber of casings found at the scene, and then a screenshot of a receipt for a 9mm magazine was found on Maybeer's cell phone. Maybeer has new counsel and direct appeal, so he attempts to attack this evidence and more through 3 assigned errors of plain error and 13 assigned errors of ineffective assistance of counsel. As I argued in my brief, I see no plain error in my review of the record, and I think that the record here on direct appeal is sufficient to address and reject a majority of Maybeer's ineffective claims. I only intend to speak today about Maybeer's claims that concern the evidence I just outlined. And I'll try to speak as to most of the ones that Mr. Riley spoke on, but I will certainly attempt to answer any questions that this court has about the rest. First, as to the plain error on the prosecutorial misconduct for closing, Maybeer asserts as a matter of plain error that the prosecutor committed misconduct during closing argument by implying that Maybeer was responsible for Thok being shot in Texas. Maybeer had to object and move for mistrial to preserve this error for appeal, and the prosecutor's two-sentence argument certainly does not rise to the level of plain error, which would be a miscarriage of justice. Just a brief segue here, because while I'm here and I get the opportunity, prosecutorial misconduct claims appear to be the exception to this court's limited plain error review on unpreserved claims. When analyzing these claims, this court and the Court of Appeals a lot of the times analyze whether the prosecutor's remarks were improper, and if so, whether those remarks were prejudicial. But I submit to this court that that is actually a full merits analysis, not plain error review.
So what did the prosecutor actually say in closing arguments?
In speaking about motive, she or he, I can't remember which prosecutor it was, said, we have a bit of an idea though, right? The defendant even tells us. He and Lockhock have had some beefs for a while. There's a bullet in Lockhock's rear end that was pulled out at his autopsy from a few years prior down in Dallas, Texas. The defendant was there. He tells Detective Young in his interview, yeah, we kind of got into it. And then about 15 minutes later, Lockhock gets shot a couple of times. And that's what Mabier told him. He got into it with Doc in Dallas, and then 15 minutes later, Doc was shot. The jury heard Mabier's statements and knew that he said that another group was the one who shot Doc. But to the extent there was any implication or inference from the prosecutor's arguments, I think that it was proper that Doc's fight with Mabier was the actual reason that Doc got shot 15 minutes later, not that some random group just happened to shoot Doc.
Is that statement inconsistent with the prosecutor's position that the prosecutor took in, I believe, the motion in limine or the 404 hearing earlier?
No, it's not inconsistent. The prosecutor's stance was always, we're not saying maybe it was the shooter. His cousin was actually a shooter. But they were both involved in the altercation, and he was there, and that provided for the reason. They've had this long-standing beef, including this shooting in Dallas, and that was the reason that Doc was shot and killed here in Omaha.
Is that consistent with a current motive? And maybe I don't understand the implications, but it sounds like Doc got the worst of it in Dallas. So what's left undone by this defendant?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
The defendant wanted to do a payback for the Dallas episode. Hadn't that been achieved?
I think Doc was the one that was shot, so was this really revenge? I think the prosecutor's position was it was just the long-standing beef. They always had tension. It wasn't necessarily who got hurt when or how or whatever. It was just they had a feud. Look at this shooting in Dallas where they got into it, they've been getting into it, and then they got into it again in Omaha and Doc was killed.
Thank you.
So I don't think it raises to the prosecutor misconduct in closing. I don't think it was error anyways, so it's certainly not plain error, and it's not ineffective for failing to move for a mistrial or to object to it either, because it also was raised as an ineffective claim. As to the admission of the evidence about the shooting itself, he raises it as a matter of plain error, that it was not admissible under Rule 404. Once again, counsel did not timely object. I don't think that this issue should be raised, or should be saved, rather, by plain error review. And the admission of it was not error anyways, because it was inextricably intertwined. Regarding Mabier's ineffective claim on the admission of the evidence of the Dallas shooting, the evidence was not hearsay because it was offered to show its effect on the two hearers as listeners, not for the truth of the matter asserted. Sergeant O'Flynn set up surveillance at Mabier's home because he knew that Mabier had been referenced in this prior shooting of Thock, and then Detective Young put out a locate for Mabier because of that same thing that he heard. Since it was not offered for the truth of the matter asserted, there was no violation of Mabier's right to confrontation either. So I think the record is sufficient on direct appeal to reject the claim on the evidence of the Dallas shooting.
Opposing counsel seems to suggest that that's just a backdoor way of getting hearsay into the trial before the jury.
Of effect on the listener?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when it's a non-hearsay reason. It's a valid non-hearsay reason, not backdoor. It's a valid reason.
So it's just not hearsay.
Right. And both officers testified as to that's why they did what they did. That's effect on the listener.
Same thing for the red hoodie.
Yes, same thing for the red hoodie. Detective Young clearly testified. They let him go after the first interview. And then they hear from her, well, he was wearing a red hoodie. Okay, then we better bring him back in and talk to him again. it was the reason for the second interview.
Isn't the remedy for evidence that may be of marginal relevance for effect on the hearer, but potentially prejudicial on the merits, 403?
Yes.
But we don't have any 403 arguments.
No, we don't. No, it's just hearsay and confrontation, correct. Moving on to counsel's failure to file motions to suppress maybe your statements during the first interview. The state submits the record's not sufficient to address these claims. We know very little about the traffic stop that occurred. We don't know when the mission of traffic stop was completed. We don't know when exactly the drug dog sniff occurred. We don't know if the extension of the stop was it even extended. We don't know any of these things. We don't know if Sergeant O'Flynn had additional inquiries that he made. We don't know if he had additional observations. All those things need to be fleshed out at the trial level before an ineffective claim is decided like this on direct appeal.
So even if the stop were proper, what was found was a extended magazine and some marijuana. Is there a basis, probable cause, to arrest Mabior at that time?
Yes. Assuming we got there, but we don't know enough to know if we properly got there.
So what's the probable cause to arrest him if we properly got
there? The fact that the marijuana is an infraction doesn't matter. It's not going to be unconstitutional to arrest him for that. And then once that magazine was found, when you have the magazine in addition to the information that the officers knew, like that he was at the scene and that the victims had referenced him in a prior shooting, we have probable cause to arrest him for the shooting now because that magazine had the same caliber of casings as those.
Was that known? I beg your pardon. Was that known at the time of the stop?
Yes.
That the magazine was consistent with the caliber at the shooting scene?
It appeared to me from Sergeant O'Flynn's testimony, yes, that he did know that.
They had done their forensics or somebody had weighed in
right.
on it?
Yes. It appeared to me that way. Now, that may be also something that should be fleshed out below. I believe the answer is yes, that they did know that.
So there's probable cause to arrest Mabior at that point, and then he's released later that night. Does that impact that probable cause to arrest?
No, it doesn't, because it's from an objective standard. It would be a review by a court of objectively a reasonable person. Would there have been probable cause? What the officer subjectively believe doesn't matter. Moving on to the surveillance video. Maybe there are signs that trial counsel is ineffective for failing to object to the interpretation by law enforcement officers of the surveillance video on the grounds that such interpretation violated the best evidence rule and constituted improper opinion testimony. These were the testimonies of Sergeant Wucher and, if I'm pronouncing that right, and Detective Young, who had no firsthand personal knowledge about the identity of the individuals in the video. In other words, the argument is that the video spoke for itself and the jury was just as capable as the officers of identifying the individuals in the surveillance video. Because the video did come in, I don't know that we necessarily do have a best evidence rule violation, and courts have held, and they're cited in my brief, that officers can narrate along with the surveillance video. That's not improper under Rule 701 of opinion testimony. As long as that narration doesn't bleed into interpretation. And I don't know if that's necessarily what we have here because officers consistently said, I believe that's maybe in the video. And they very specifically testified that they could not identify anyone in that video based on the video alone. They were doing it solely based on their investigation and their matching up their investigation with the video. But regardless.
So they acknowledged that they couldn't personally identify Mabior yes. as the person just by looking at the video.
Yes, they did not know him. They did not have any history with him, and you couldn't tell from the video. But regardless, he cannot establish prejudice. The original modified versions of the video were received in evidence. The officers testified as to what I just said. And the obvious deduction from both testimony in combination with the video was that Mabior shot Dang. So, let's see. The improper vouching Maybe asserts that the prosecutors committed misconduct, and they used the term we several times when questioning law enforcement officers. The state's position is that even if improper, he can't show that the prosecutor's terminology prejudiced his right to a fair trial and therefore resulted in plain error or even prejudice for his ineffective claim. And that's because the majority of the instances the prosecutors used that terminology was as a manner of speaking to help the jury visualize the steps that the officers, the crime lab personnel, had taken in their investigation, or to recap simply what they had already said, or to refer to everyone in the courtroom as what they were watching, like what we are seeing now on the video. And then second, none of the primary evidence against Mabier had anything to do with the credibility of the law enforcement witnesses and the investigative process. And three, the prosecutor argued to the jury in closing that it was to assess the credibility of all the witnesses, including specifically those who worked for the OPD and the crime lab. So the state sees no plain error, and I also don't see how Mabier can show prejudice from trial counsel's failure to object to that terminology. Finally, I've raised a plain error in sentencing. It's in my brief. It's the court had sentenced Mabier to life without possibility of parole on each count of first-degree murder. It's not an authorized sentence. It must be life imprisonment. So I ask that this court modify Mabier's sentences accordingly. And if this court has no further questions, other than the modification, we ask that you affirm Mabier's convictions and sentences. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There's no time for rebuttal. Counsel, that concludes arguments in State versus Mabior. And you are excused. And the court is adjourned.